Another technique is what we call the victory log. The victory log. I ask you to keep a notebook like many of you are taking notes in right now, a little spiral, three-ring binder, or a steno pad. And every time you have a little victory in your life, it doesn't have to be a big one, you write it down. Number one, number two, number three, you just keep a log going. Got that job. Got my kid to clean up his room. Found a really great suit on sale. Whatever it is. Every time I'm going to do something scary, I open my victory log and I look at all the things I've already done and I say, my God, if I did all that, then I can do this next thing. So it's a way of building up that stack of poker chips, and when you're about to go do that scary thing, you realize you can afford to ante in that many chips. Another technique I recommend is called the warm fuzzy file. The warm fuzzy file. Warm fuzzies are things that make you feel warm and fuzzy. Cold pricklies are things that make you feel cold and like you want to be away. If I go over to Jan and I say, I really like you, that's a warm fuzzy. If I say to Margaret, I really appreciate the meal you made last night, or I really appreciate the way you helped pull the team together for that corporate report, that's a warm fuzzy. If someone sends me a thank you note, says, wow, your tapes changed my life, thank you. It's all because of you, and you taught me how to take risks and all that stuff. Hey, I go, wow, that's neat, and I put that in my warm fuzzy file. And then someday when I'm feeling depressed, or I feel like I'm not making much of a difference in the world, or I'm comparing myself to Dennis Waitley, who's made more tapes than I have or something, and I'm feeling like I haven't done enough, then what I do is I open up my warm fuzzy file. And in there are all these things. And I go, wow, I did that, and this person, I made a difference in their life, and I've got this letter here and this thank you card here. Whew. See, I can build up my sense of self-esteem. I have a friend named Paula Klimek, who for my 38th birthday gave me a box, just a little tiny box, and in it were about 30 things. Little trinkets that you might buy, like little charms and things, but cheap, inexpensive things. A little bell, a little tiny candle charm. There was a little elephant in there. And there was an acorn. And each thing was wrapped in a little piece of paper with a rubber band around it. And she said, I give you this acorn because you represent wisdom in my life. You're one of the wisest people I know. I appreciate that. And the little candle said, you're a bright light in my life. Sometimes when I feel depressed, I call you and you cheer me up. And each little gift like that had a little note around it. I mean, there was a whole box full of warm fuzzies. I still have that box because it reminds me of who I am when I forget. Another thing we do is in our company, we have a technique called the victory wall. From floor to ceiling, it's got little victories on it. A big order we just got, a letter from a client saying thank you, a testimonial letter from a speech. And then when my staff come in, they see all these victories we're having, they feel like they're making a contribution, that something's going on. Otherwise, they're just licking stamps and answering the mail, and they don't have that sense that they're part of this victory. So it's another way to focus on the positive. Another technique I love to do with families and in corporations, with schools, is get your staff together, your family together, have them sit in a circle, give them a homework assignment. Say, tomorrow we're going to come back, we're all going to sit in the same circle. I want you to bring an object, something you keep because it reminds you of a success in your life. And we're each going to talk about that object and what the success is. And so I've been in groups where people have brought in an ashtray from a casino in Las Vegas where they'd won $10,000 playing craps. Another person had a golf ball they'd hit a hole-in-one with. Another person had a letter from a student saying, you've made a big impact in my life. One woman brought in a stick with a string around it that was given to girls when she was 14 years old. Now, this lady was about 45, right, at Girl Scout camp for being some kind of, you know, initiation rite and everything. And here it was 30 years later, and she still had it. And we've all got those things, don't we? Things that you won't throw away. You know, you go to move and it's in the sock drawer and you go, oh, I can't throw that away. You feel embarrassed putting it up on the mantle, but the fact is you'd never let it go. I still have my 8th grade English medal, for example. I had a kid bring in, the kid was 18, he brought in a plaque. He was the cutest baby in the cutest baby contest in Huntington Beach, California. Here was like 17 years later, was still his success symbol. So make sure that you have success symbols in your life. Make sure that you put them somewhere where you can see it. So it reminds you. I don't know if you noticed, but we have auditory, visually, and kinesthetically oriented people. Auditory people, to feel good, to have high self-esteem, they need to hear it. Hey, I like you. Kinesthetic people need to be touched. They'll always say to their husbands, I know you tell me, but you never touch me. Auditory people are always saying, do you love me? Yes. 5 minutes later, do you still love me? Yes. 20 minutes, you still love me? Hi, I told you I love you. Give me a break. Look, I'll put it on tape. You can play it anytime you want. You know, that kind of thing. But auditory people need to hear it. They're the ones that at 3 a.m. and they'll say, why do you love me? You know? You have to give them a long list or they don't feel good, okay? And visual people need to see things. They need to be brought flowers. If you're a man, you need to shave for a visually oriented wife, or she thinks you don't care, you know, because she's visual. If you mess up the house, it's a personal affront. Whereas a kinesthetic person never cleans up the house. Who cares? Just have a good time. Feels good, right? So visually, if you're a visual person, make sure you display your success symbols. Another aspect of acknowledgement is to ask for acknowledgement. One of the things we know about peak performers in life, people that are super successful, is that they ask for what they want. This was one of the hardest things for me to learn. I realized I wasn't getting what I wanted, but I was thinking somehow people were supposed to know. Well, let me ask you this. How many of you got everything you wanted from your parents when you were a kid? Can I see a show of hands? No hands. How many of you asked everything you wanted clearly, consistently, over and over from your parents? Anyone? How many of your parents were psychics? So we got no hands here. See? So the reality is, if you don't ask, they don't know you want it, and then they don't give it to you, then you think, well, parents know everything, and so then you decide there must be something wrong with me. Because if they loved me, they'd what? They'd know. They'd know, exactly. I mean, I know none of you have ever said that, but I'm sure you've heard people say, if you really love me, I wouldn't have to ask. You'd know what I want. And the reality is we don't. So I've learned you have to ask for acknowledgement. Remember recently I cleaned our basement up, which was something I didn't really want to do, but it got to the point where it was a mess, and I told you about completion, so we cleaned the basement up. And I finished up, and I went upstairs, and I got Georgia, and I asked her to come down. And I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to come down to the basement. I want you to tell me what a great job I did. So she came down, and she went, wow, look at this. You got all these boxes piled up, and where'd those other ones go? Well, I took a razor blade, and I cut them up, and you're on the ground. Well, wonderful. And look, you can see where all the food is, and you can see where all the books are. This is great. And my little kid inside was going, yeah, Mom. Now, you might say I should be above that, and I don't need that anymore, but the truth is I did, and I wanted it, and I asked for it, and I got it. So you can ask for the acknowledgement you want. And one of the techniques I teach in one of my seminars is at the end of every week, if you work in a company, write down everything you did and all the successes you had and put that in a memo to your superior. You know, here's what I accomplished this week. Also put down anything that you didn't accomplish that you need assistance with. And I didn't get to this, and I really could use your help. I need some supervision here. I have a friend that works with Pacific Bell. This woman, in a 3-year period, got 5 advancements over almost everyone else in the department. Why? Because the boss knew what she was doing, where she didn't know what half the other people were doing. So if you want people to acknowledge you, make sure you clearly communicate to them what it is you deserve to be acknowledged for. Quit waiting and hoping that they'll someday notice. I also want to talk about the importance of acknowledging people in your family, because most often we take them for granted. Well, of course I love you. I buy the groceries, don't I? Of course I love you. I paid for your college education. When I was a counselor at the university, the one thing I heard most was, I think my dad loves me, but he never tells me. So those of you that are listening to this, make sure you tell your family, your wife, your husband, your kids, what you acknowledge them for. We have a little process that I call the victim affirmation. I have 2 boys. When I tuck them in, I literally tuck them in like so it's a straitjacket around their arms. They can't move. And then I grab them by the shoulders. I look them right in the eye. And then I tell them what I love about them. Like, they can't go anywhere. They're a totally captive audience. And I'll say to my son, Kyle, Kyle, I really love you, son. God, I love you. You're just the neatest kid. I feel so lucky to have a kid like you. Amazing. I just love your zip and your energy and your charm. And you're a lot like me, so I love that about you. And I said, you know, but what I love best about you, this might be one day, I said, what I love best about you is you're a little con man. And sometimes you get yourself in trouble, but God, I love the way you go for what you want. I mean, you never take a no. If you want a skateboard, you're not giving up till you get a skateboard. You're inspiring. I'm really glad you're in my life. I love you. And then I walk out of the room. Here's this kid looking up at the ceiling. Whoa, what was that? You know. But he knows that Dad loves him. I have another friend who uses something called post-it therapy. You know those little yellow post-its, little sticky on the back, you can put them on everything? And what he does is every night before he goes to bed, he puts a post-it somewhere that he knows his daughter will find it. On her lunchbox, in her book, on the mirror in the bathroom, on her door. And he says something he appreciates about her. Appreciate you helping me do the dishes. I'm really inspired by how you went for that math test and you got an A. I love the way you supported your mother tonight. He said he went into her room one day looking for a hammer, the tool that was lost. He was looking around, he couldn't find it, went in her room. As he was coming out of her room, he noticed on the back of her door 250 Post-its. She had kept every one. They were all in neat little rows in the back of her door. Now that girl, every time she goes out of that house, guess what? She knows somebody loves me. See, she's got visual proof of it. One thing I'd like to share with you about giving acknowledgement is how one-on-one can be very important. I think a lot of times we think we have to change the whole world, and sometimes you can just change one person, and that makes a big difference. Wally Amos, the guy who created Famous Amos cookies, was telling a story one day about how he was walking down the beach in Mexico, and he saw this guy throwing things out into the ocean, and he didn't know what the heck it was. It was dusk, and he couldn't see that well, so he walked closer, and he noticed this guy was picking up starfish, and he was flinging them out into the ocean. And he thought, why is this guy doing that? So he goes up to him, he says, what are you doing, sir? He says, I'm throwing starfish out into the ocean. He says, I know, but why? He says, it's low tide, and all the starfish have been washed up on a beach, and if they don't have water, they die. So I throw them back in the ocean every night, and then they get to live. He says, you're crazy. He says, what do you mean? He says, you're crazy. He says, look, first of all, this is nature's way of thinning out the starfish that are supposed to die, and you know, you're interfering with that. And he said, more importantly, you can't really make a difference. I mean, you're only going to get to a couple hundred starfish, and it's dark, and there's probably 10,000 miles of beaches all around the world. Starfish are right now dying on the beach. What difference can you make? And the guy just picked up another starfish and threw it way out into the water. He looked Wally right in the eye, and he said, made a difference to that one. So give yourself permission to make a difference in a small way. It doesn't always have to be huge. Okay. Let's move on to step two in our 10-step process to success. So step one was acknowledge and complete the past. Step two is acknowledge and affirm your strengths. What I recommend, just a few simple techniques. Number one, make a list of all your strengths, all of your good qualities, all of your good characteristics. And as you make that list, enroll your family and friends in helping you. Ask them to write down or to tell you what they like about you, what they see as your strengths, what you do well. We're talking about things like friendly, outgoing, good speaker, good listener, loving, compassionate, perseverant, committed to the job, a team player, loyal, those kind of qualities. And get a list of those. Know what they are. We did a workshop in New Haven, Connecticut for teenagers. And we asked the kids to go home with a sheet. And on the sheet it said to the parent, please write down all of your children's strengths as you perceive them. Tell the child why you wrote what you wrote, sign it, and let them bring it back to the workshop. At the end of the workshop, we were asking the kids, of all the things we did here, what did you like best? Hands down, the one where you said, ask our parents to tell us what they liked about us was the most important one. Now, we've since discovered in the California Task Force to Promote Self-Esteem research that the number one impactor on a child's self-esteem is their perception of how valued they are by their parents. If you feel your parents value you and see you as a worthy being, that is really, more than anything, going to impact your self-esteem. Now, once you become a teenager, it often becomes your peer group. Now, these kids said things to us like this. It's the first time my father ever said he loved me. I didn't know my stepmother liked me. And all of a sudden, I find all of these things she liked about me. I was blown away. It's the first time my mother ever said anything nice to me. Now, were these parents purposely being bad to their kids? No. They just took it for granted. I sometimes ask parents, and those of you listening may think about this, if you're a parent, what are the last 10 things you said to your kids? Usually it's things like, when I get home, I don't want to see a mess in the bathroom. I don't want to see any clothes on the floor. Make sure the dishes are done. I don't want you in the house if it's not locked, you know, and on it goes. Very rarely do they report out, I really love you, have a great day, and so on. So make sure that you give yourself permission to tell your kids what their strengths are, as well as to ask other people what yours are. Any comment you give to a kid or an adult needs to be sincere. So be sincere. Don't make up stuff. Sometimes you have to look. And sometimes you have to look really hard. There's a woman named Connie Dombrowski, who was the chairperson of the National Council for Self-Esteem. A really beautiful woman. And she was telling about an incident in Bakersfield, California, where she worked with a bunch of kids over the summer to work with the self-esteem curriculum with them, kind of things we're talking about here, but doing it with high school kids. And she said, I want you to give me the worst 15 kids you can find. I want the bottom of the barrel because I believe this stuff will work with them, but I need to know. So they gave her 15 really tough kids. They gave her the cumulative files to look at, and one of the kids was named Moses. And in his cumulative record file, there was not only the fact that he'd been kicked out of school 4 years in a row on the first day of school for picking up a chair and throwing it at the teacher, but also there were 3 pages of his criminal record. He had been arrested for selling drugs. He'd been arrested for driving a car under the influence of drugs. The car also happened to be stolen. He had carved in his left arm his name with a razor blade under the influence of PCP. He had once, under the influence of PCP, angel dust, had driven 13 or 14 cars off the road in a little place called Blood Alley, which is a very dangerous strip of road up the middle of California. Took about 10 or 12 police cars and state police and county sheriffs to stop him and subdue him. He had been involved, I think, in breaking and entering and a number of other kinds of things. But there was like 3 pages of printout. So Moses was a pretty tough kid. Oh, he also had tattoos on his arm, like swastikas and Ozzy Osbourne signs and things like that. And on his other hand, he had tattooed, "Satan, I'm coming home." He had long hair, little mustache. Not the kind of kid you'd necessarily want to meet in a dark alley late at night. Now, Connie went and she enrolled each of these kids, talked to their parents and told them about the program and said, if you do this, it'll improve your life and so forth. And Moses said, I don't see the point. You know, I'm up for trial for all these cars I ran off the road and they're going to send me to the youth authority and I'm going to be in, you know, the detention center, and why should I do this course? She said, look, do it. It'll make a difference in your life. So she enrolled him. First day of summer school starts, they're going to do this self-esteem work, and Moses never shows up. Second day, still no Moses. So finally she decides, look, here's what I'll do. I'm going to drive over to Moses' house and see what I can do. So she drives over to his house. She knocks on the door. Moses' father comes running to the door. He says, hi, can I talk to your son? Yes. Talks to Moses. Says, Moses, you were going to do the course. And he says, I decided not to. To make a long story short, she re-enrolls him in the process. Next morning, 9 o'clock, no Moses. 10 o'clock, finally, in walks Moses. She says, Moses, I'm so glad to see you, son. Come over here. Sit down. Here's your desk. Here's your manual. These are the rules up on the board that we all made up the first 2 days of class. That's what we do here. And here's the group you're going to be in. And get into the group. And here's what we're talking about. And Moses got involved. He was really into it. About 45 minutes later, he raises his hand and says, Ms. Dombrowski, I need to go to the bathroom. Says, I hear you, Moses. You need to go to the bathroom. But you'll notice up there on the board, we go to the bathroom at 11:15. It's now 10:45. You've got to wait. No, Ms. Dombrowski, you don't understand. I need to go to the bathroom now. She says, Moses, I understand. You need to go to the bathroom now. But you get to go at 11:15. At which point, Moses stood up and picked up a chair. Connie said time froze, and she remembered the cum file. Picks up chair on first day of school and throws at teacher. And she was kind of thinking, do I duck left? Do I duck right? And she said, Moses put the chair down, and he said something I can't repeat on tape, and then he threw the chair at the wall, and he ran out of the room. Now, that afternoon, Connie gets in her car, drives back over to Moses' house, knocks on the door. Moses' father gets up, runs toward the door, says, Ms. Dombrowski, Ms. Dombrowski, let me explain. She says, no, sir, let me explain something to you. Moses has been coming to school 4 years in a row, under stress, the first day of school, he picks up a chair and throws it at the teacher. Today, under a highly confrontive situation, Moses picked up the chair, and instead of throwing it at the teacher, he threw it at the wall. Moses, that's progress. I expect to see you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Turned on her heel and walked away. Next morning, 8:15, in walks Moses. Connie says, Moses, what are you doing here? Ms. Dombrowski, I've been going to school for like 10, 12 years. You're the first person who's ever seen anything positive in me. I came back because I wanted to see if you'd find anything else. See, that's how powerful acknowledgement and looking for the positive. Now, she told me, she said, Jack, in order to find the positive in Moses, I had to look with a magnifying glass. But it was in there. By the way, just if you're curious, Moses completed that course, and he went up for trial, and Connie went with him as a character witness and said, look, the kid's rehabilitated, don't send him to youth authority, it's like a prison school, you know, they teach you how to do criminal stuff better, so we don't want that for this kid. And the judge said, easy for you to say, lady, you live, you know, in the Midwest, in Nebraska. you'll leave and the kid will be with his peer group, and a month from now he'll be back on the street, forget it. And she said, what if I adopt him? And she actually did. She adopted Moses. But he said, look, well, so what if you adopt him? You'll go back, you're a consultant on the road. She said, look, here's the deal. I'll put him in Boys Town, and I will bring him home on the weekends. And he said, why are you doing this? She said, you know, for years I've been running as a jogger, and every time I go to Utah in Salt Lake City where I consult, I run through the park, and there's this rose bush that's always been in terrible disarray. There's no trellis, there's weeds, there's no, you know, it needs trimmed back. And I'm always thinking, someone ought to do something about that rose bush. And as I run by, I keep thinking that. And she said, you know, last month, before I started this program, I was coming into Utah, and I'm running in the park, and I see these two older people fixing up the rose bush. And I stopped. And I said, hi, I noticed you're fixing up the rose bush. Are you part of the parks department? He says, no. Are you some elderly people fix up the park project? What is this? No. He says, you know, my wife here and I, we walk through the park every day, and we live about two blocks from here. And every time we walk past this rose bush, we go, you know, someone ought to do something about this rose bush. Just last week, my husband looked over at me and he said, you know, Helen, we're somebody. Why don't we fix up the rose bush? And she said, I look at this young man, Moses. He's a rose bush. And I think someone ought to do something about that rose bush. But if not me, who? And if not now, when? And if not here, where? See, and I think we have to live our life like that. See ourselves as a rose bush, see our friends and our family as rose bushes, and start to make a commitment to our own self-esteem and the self-esteem of others by looking for that positive inside and recognizing it.